Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. This one is a little bit different because we have Eric and Mark both away today. So we have two ring-ins. We have the CEO and one of the owners of Unemployable with us, Perry Bentley, joining us from South Korea. And we have one of our secret weapons, Stuart from Melbourne, who is in charge of all of our content, slicing, dicing, and distribution. You're going to hear some stunning numbers on the growth of Unemployable, the millions of views that we are getting across all platforms. All the data is revealed, how we do it, why we do it. If you're interested in growing an audience, whether you are a podcaster or whether you are a brand or you're just somebody that's trying to get attention for a project, this is the podcast for you because this is a really open discussion. I ask the questions, what's the two worst mistakes that we made in the last 18 months? I told the boys before we roll tape, boys, don't hold back. Share the wealth, share the learnings, because we have an abundance mentality. That's why people come to the pod. So we took a risk and we decided to pull back the kimono and really show you behind the growing beast that is Unemployable Media. With that said, I hope you enjoy it. If you do, the one thing that would really help us is just subscribe to the channel. Every time we look at that metric, it's like half of you that watch the content are subscribed, the other half aren't. By subscribing, it helps you because we can get better guests on the show and make it a better show for everybody. With that said, I hope you enjoy it. Bye for now. So today I am joined by two new faces. For those of you who watch the pod every single week, you'll notice that Mark and Eric are both absent at the moment. That's what happens when you get podcast guests that are actually real business people. They have things to attend to. Mark's been doing a massive photo shoot over 3 or 4 days with his e-com brand, and he is needed on the ground all the time right now to manage that. And Eric is on holidays in the Whitsundays for his birthday with his family from Canada. And, you know, what's the point of being in business if you can't take some time out? So I want to welcome to the pod two faces that you may be seeing for the first time. Perry Bentley is our CEO, one of the co-owners of Unemployable with myself and Eric and the team. And he is the good-looking rooster with the Pommy accent. And then we have Stu. Now, Stu's kind of like one of our secret weapons here at Unemployable. We keep him locked up in a cave in Melbourne. And he essentially is the guy that is responsible for our social strategy and our clips and our growth, in a lot of ways, our growth and getting virality for the Unemployable channel. So, Stu, welcome to the show. Perry, nice to see you. And of course, we have James here as well. How are you doing, James? Good to see you.
Good.
So, Perry, maybe just let people know for a little bit of context where in the world you are, because it's kind of interesting. And then we're going to dive in because, guys, today we're going to cover, a real behind the scenes look at Unemployable and how we started, how we're growing, where we're heading. And you're going to get loads as a listener takeaways today on how to grow your business using socials as well, even if it's not a podcast. So, Perry, just give people a little background on that, and then we'll switch to you, Stu, to get a frame.
Yeah, right. So as some people may know or may not, I'm in South Korea right now. And for some reason, these lugheads gave me the keys to Unemployable and let me start growing a business. And thankfully, it started growing, which has been an amazing experience. And funny enough, I'm moving over to Thailand in a few weeks, and I'm going to do the same thing you did, Ad. And I'm going to do a mini series on it just to show people that you can be an entrepreneur and move from location A to B and still work your fingers to the bone. So, I make sure that everything runs. And if it wasn't for guys like you and Stu in the background helping us build this, we wouldn't have what we have right now.
And by way of background, Perry, maybe you could talk about how you came to be here, because a lot of our listeners probably watching, looking for an opportunity to go, how did you get in business with Adam and Eric and James and Mark? Like, how did that actually unfold from South Korea? I mean, I'm in Australia and I'd like that opportunity. How do I get that opportunity? So maybe just tell us a backstory of how you came to be here so that you can connect those dots for people who are looking for opportunities.
So I got an opportunity to work with Reliable Education, which was back in 2018. A friend of mine who I'd worked in a company in north of Thailand called me up, and we were both the best sales guys at that company. And he goes, "Hey, there's this Aussie company. You said something about learning about Amazon before. You might be interested in this." And I was like, "Oh, wow, okay, perfect." So I started looking at the company, met Lisa, who was just an awesome lady at Reliable Education. And one thing led to another. I started doing the onboarding and like the operations whilst actually learning how to build an Amazon business at the same time. And that was at a point when Adam was literally the face of Australia and Amazon, probably on a global basis, I would say, at that point. Like it was pretty incredible. The events were getting to like, 1,000, 2,000 people at that point. But what I had a strength in was that I just kept turning up, and I kept doing an extra couple hours, and I just kept, trying to go, well, and it's something that Stu and I have spoken before, is that these days, just spending even an hour or 2 hours more than most people makes you exceptional. And I don't want to say that you just need to do 2 hours. You need to have focused hours, but that's how I really came into it. I just kept turning up. People asked me, "Hey, can you do this?" I said, "Yeah, I can do it," even if I didn't know how to do it. And I just figured out how to do it on the job, and then figure out how to do it better than other people, so that you can then turn it into a process and then move away from it. And it's, again, it's the same thing what we're doing with Unemployable right now. The team's kind of grown all like quite exponentially in the last few months, and it's just from, this is how you do it, record it, you do it now, And yeah, that's a little bit of how I got into it, is just turning up every day and smiling, really.
And for those of you who don't know that context, Reliable Education was a company that I co-founded with a terrific co-founder called Joe Alainik in Brisbane. And we grew the second largest Amazon education business in the world. We had 17,000 students in 45 countries in the end, and we generated about $70 million in sales. And Perry's mate Rory joined our company from an Upwork ad. So he was a British guy, advertised his services on Upwork while living in Thailand, got a job with our company, and then told Perry. And then Perry joined us through referral and became a really go-to guy at Reliable because he was just that guy. As he said, that we knew if we need something done, as they say, if you need something done, give it to a busy guy. And Perry was not just the busy guy, but he was the nice guy, and he was always willing to learn, no ego, no attachment to being right, just get the job done. And that has ultimately led Perry to now being the CEO of Unemployable, which, as you're going to learn in this podcast, is really starting to form into something quite special. So, Perry, thank you for the context, mate, and great to have you here with us. And I think for a lot of listeners, hearing a British guy living in South Korea, I think you're leaving soon to move somewhere else.
Yeah, it's Thailand.
Thailand. So you're working wherever you want, doing something you love, working with amazing people. And that all comes down to just being a bit better. Speaking of people who are a little bit better than the average punter, over to you, Stu. Give us a little bit of background on you. You're Melbourne based. How did you come across Unemployable? What's your background?
I don't know. I like to say that I've had a weird life. I think it's what happens when you grow up on the internet. I was studying actually to be a doctor, but then I had a couple of opportunities to do YouTube a lot earlier in my life. I had a very like my, one of my best friends did YouTube very early in his life, so I was introduced to it very early. I don't know. I've done it for almost 10 years now. It's hard to like put into words like 10 years of a life doing media, doing content, doing YouTube and all that kind of stuff. But I finished my degree, but I didn't end up going to med school. I left, wanted to start doing business. I joined a couple of companies here and there, and mostly did YouTube. I actually saw a job advert. I was a bit like, my life was empty, right? So I didn't know what to do. I was sitting at home basically 24/7, and I was just in this like rut. I was like, I have to do something. I got to get out of just sitting at my home and doing shit all, right? And so even though I had been successful in the past, I felt like a failure in heart. Because I was like, I'm just sitting here, like rotting away. Weirdly enough, he had a job ad put out for a social media manager. It wasn't even for everything else that I've been doing now, but it was something there that I don't know, clicked with me. The way you spoke on that advert, I was like, you know what? This guy seems like my kind of people. like, I didn't actually know you guys. Like, I didn't know Adam that, like, I didn't know what you had done in the past. I didn't know Eric. I didn't know any of you guys. But the way that that job advert came to me, I was like, you know what? Like, fuck it. What's the worst that's going to happen? Like, I'll just apply. I just want to be around cool people. I don't know. And that kind of started like a 16, 18 month long, great friendship with a lot of you guys. Like, Perry's one of my best friends and I haven't even met him. We just have like a virtual thing. But to put into perspective what we've done at Unemployable, we've done 25 million views in 16 months, which is really difficult in Australia, given how small our country is, right? Yeah. Almost 60,000 followers from zero. Like, when I jumped on, we were basically at zero, right? And yeah, it's kind of where we are right now.
So 25 million views across our content, 60,000 followers. That's a combination of Instagram and YouTube subs, I suppose, maybe some TikTok.
TikTok, Meta, YouTube, and Instagram.
Okay. I want to dive into that a lot more. But before we do, I do think there is some value just in sharing a little bit more context, because hearing you talk, Stu, reminds me of when I interviewed you. So I put a job on Seek. And this is a tip for all entrepreneurs listening to this. I've been famous over the years for writing job ads that stand out. So in Los Angeles, when I was recruiting for my animation company, I used to do it through a platform called Craigslist. And I wrote a job post saying, I don't care whether you've got a degree, because in my mind, a degree is like a thermometer. You know, what is it? Nothing's got more degrees than a thermometer. You stick that up your ass. So yeah. What I'm interested in is really talented people. I don't care if you're a high functioning pothead. I literally wrote this in the ad before the legalization of weed and was told I could have gotten a lot of trouble for that. But I literally wrote that in the ad, and I would get about 50 applications an hour when I put that up on Craigslist Los Angeles, because people were craving working at a real company. And I put something similar up on Seek, and I got Stu's resume. And it was kind of loose, but there was something about the way that Stu wrote, it was a real communication from a person back, because I said, make sure you put a cover letter on it explaining where you are in life. And there was something in that, what Stu wrote. And I had all the formal ones, and I had all the ones that had all the letters after their name. And then I had this kid from Melbourne who had passion and gave me his data. Like, this is what I've done on YouTube. And I was like, holy shit, this kid's got some chops. And I remember ringing Perry going, I've got this guy Stu, you know, from Melbourne. And he's loose as hell, but there's something about this guy that I think we should interview him. And then I shortlisted you. And then once we interviewed you, and then we interviewed you on Zoom, and then we got you up for the final interview, we paid for Stu's flight. We said, Stu, before we hire you, we want to meet you. Book yourself a flight. Send us the bank details. We're going to pay for your flight and your Uber. We want you to the studio because we want to meet you. And that's actually what we do when we recruit. We won't hire until we've actually eyeballed the person. And then we met Stu, and then Stu, the rest has been history. It's been basically, as you said, 25 million. What was it? 25
million. Yeah, 25 million views across all platforms. And that's only growing
in 12 months.
I'll say it's probably the most that growth has happened in the last six. Literally, like the first like 12 months, we were just like figuring out shit, getting it wrong a lot, and then trying to do it again. We made a lot of mistakes of it, like in the first year. Ton of mistakes.
Just to go back to that then. So just for context, Adam, what were you actually advertising for? Did you know what you actually wanted, or were you sort of going, I just want someone to run socials because it's a big piece. I don't know what it is. That's part one. And then two, Stu, what do you actually classify yourself as? So if someone was to go and find a Stu, what would they actually target it on?
Yeah. Go ahead, Adam.
At the time, we had two cameramen and editors at that time. We're a little bit of overkill. We basically tried to start off and be Stephen Bartlett from day one. You know, and we watched everything that Stephen Bartlett, the Diary of a CEO, had done. And we think in the world of podcasting, he is the GOAT in terms of production. Joe Rogan was the first, but the best, in my opinion, is Steve Bartlett in terms of vision, team, all that. And so I watched a video and he said, oh, you know, we have one guy whose full-time job is just doing the trailer for the pod each week, just one video. And so we went, all right, we're going to hire a guy full-time, 80, 90 grand a year just to do trailers. And then we got another guy, so we had two. So had all this content, and I was like, all right, we're not leveraging this content well enough. We've just got the pod coming out, but there should be shorts, there should be mid-form content, and then that should be distributed across TikTok, Facebook, you know, all of these things. We just didn't have that in-house. So I was looking for somebody who understood that. And then Stu came along and showed me some channels that he built. And I was like, holy shit, bro, like that's some serious traffic in Australia. And we made some mistakes, and Stu will maybe dive into the biggest mistake we did, which was buying traffic initially. And we'll talk,
A bigger mistake than that, to be honest. And
I just want to pull one thread on that though beforehand, is that you must have seen something really good in him for that cover letter, because I've seen his grammar and it's dog shit.
So, so you're right. I think I actually pointed that out there. I said he can't spell for shit, but the guy can edit.
And after he's done his doctor's degree, he should probably check his handwriting too.
Yeah. No, there you go.
My handwriting is terrible. That's the funny part. I think, for me, I grew up in a very hard up part of Melbourne. It's like a lot of the people around the areas that I've been in have all speak like me. You'll know if you, when you hear me talk, you're like, there's this place in Sydney or Melbourne that he sounds like he's from, because I got that told to me when I went on the stage once. But now the big thing, just for James's question as well, like it's really hard to kind of quantify like what I actually do. Like a big thing for me is attention. Like it's an attention game. Like if you ask, like, what does Gary Vee do? Like, he just knows how to harness attention, right? So the big thing for me is, like, I deeply understand what Australians resonate with. And so because I understand what they want, what they need, what's affecting them personally, I'm able to get them to react in a bad way sometimes, Adam would know. But, like, I know how to get people to stop, which is the biggest challenge right now. It's getting people to stop. Yeah, there is so much bloat on social media, so much bullshit, right? And so a hard part is like, how do you quantify what that is? Getting someone to stop. How do you hire for that? There is no really a hiring for that. But if I was to say like, what do I actually do? It's mostly growth. Like I like to get views. I like to get followers. I like it's a numbers game for me. Like I love seeing the numbers grow. But a big part of it's also psychology. Like you got to understand the people you're serving and what they actually give a shit about. And so
I was going to say, I remember at the time we were trying some of these new AI video editing tools that promised upload your YouTube clip and we'll give you 6 or 8 clips automatically. And we tried a few of these and every single time you're just like, no. And then you go, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to invest and I'm going to go hire a Filipino editor, right, to do it. And Filipinos are lovely, lovely people, but they're not Australian. And so they don't understand Australian mindset. Mm. And so I've heard Simon Beard say this, that the future is going to be owned by the editors. Yeah. And it's the people who know. And this is where Stu has the ability to go through a podcast and go, oh, that's really going to piss them off if I cut that. Or that's really going to be shared if I cut that.
Yeah.
And having that person to have cultural context, and that's why we've got a Lebanese guy in working class Melbourne who lives around the average Aussie. He understands
why. Well, I'm Assyrian, we're even smaller than Lebanese. I'm Assyrian, there's not a lot of Assyrians in Australia as well, but they'll know.
And so, with these political podcasts that we've been doing a few of lately, I mean, you've some fairly polarizing clips in there, which grabs the attention. As you sort of said before, a testament to Adam's inbox getting fucking shot to pieces a few times with hate mail.
Stu and I have a bit of a love-hate relationship. And not just Stu. Well, I mean, this is the risk, and I want to make this clear to content creators out there, is that you've got to have a relationship where you can work with the person, because we're basically putting our personal brand in the hands of a young guy in Melbourne who's hungry as hell. Yeah. And I've worked for 30 years to build a brand and a reputation, but editors have the ability to slice and dice things, sometimes contextually in a way that is going to get like what Stu wants. Stu wants attention. So he can slice me out of context and make me look like a complete arsehole. Like,
up until socials happen and you could have your own channel, that's what mainstream media did. They could assassinate someone publicly in a heartbeat and keep hammering them down and down and down.
Stuart was just doing it internally.
He could have been a producer for a current affair, mate. I'm telling you.
Nah, you know what? But the thing is, like, if I didn't do that, though, where would we be? That's the biggest question I ask myself, right? Do we want to get there in 10 years or do we want to get there in 1 year or 2 years, for example? And that's the hard pill that we have to swallow sometimes. But someone I respect a lot, two people actually, Stephen Bartlett, Alex Hormozi. You're going to piss off 90% of the people you post content for anyway, and you're only going to have 10% of people that love you. But those 10% of people will defend you and be fans, right? And like, I go back to this thing. It's like attention is so difficult. It is so difficult to get. Obviously, there's things that we know now that we're doing, like Adam's testing out some stuff that we should talk about, the thing that you're doing. Yeah. That's crazy awesome stuff, right? But to like bring it to like full circle, like if you want to like to just back to what James was asking, like how do you find someone like me? It's not easy to find people like me. There are very few people in Australia that have the skill set that I have, right? But it's something that I've built over 10 years. But if it was something that I would say, okay, like if tomorrow I have to find someone to replace me, what I would look for. I don't go for the guy or the girl with the marketing degree or the MBA and they I did a marketing master's and all that bullshit, right? I don't care. I want someone who's able to get attention. Like, show me. Like, here's this clip. Show me that you can get a couple of views. You're going to get it wrong 9 out of 10 times, right? I only hit 1 in every 10. It's a volume game at the end of the day, right? But here's this clip. What do you think would work? Like, show me. Like, here's a podcast or here's what I do for, like, here's my business. Show me. Like, how would you get attention if you were doing this? And also to the extreme, like, don't worry about, okay, what's legal. Just like if you had this business and you had to go to the extreme to go viral, what would you do? And let's walk backwards. Let's walk backwards to when it makes sense. You know what I mean?
We have to stop there and set red bracket and little asterisks. Do worry if it's fucking legal, Stu.
No, that's what I say. Step backwards.
You've got the warning at the beginning, James.
Yeah,
it's all right.
I think you have to flush it out a little bit, Perry.
Well, no, I mean, this is actually interesting because from Stu, this is what you've got to understand if you're a brand owner listening to this. You need somebody who's a savage like Stu, that is his number one priority is attention, but you also need to work with that guy because they literally can get you into legal trouble and they can put you in a light that has got attention and sometimes that attention won't align with your personal brand and you internally have to decide. And we've had fights, don't worry about it. You know, Stu and Eric, and we've had fights. Because sometimes, you know, there's that, you know, but like Elon says, if you're not breaking things, you're not moving fast enough. But so you've also got to have that mutual respect both ways. Like Stu can make mistakes sometimes, and sometimes I can say things that are wrong as well. But what makes the balance work is both having a mutual respect going, well, Stu's trying to get attention, I'm trying to keep my reputation. So somewhere in the middle, there has to be, and like a simple example is sometimes like a little precursor to what I said has been cut off, which removes important context from a clip. Or the clip was cut off at a certain point where if it had gone for an extra sentence or two, I wouldn't cop 500 abusive messages, which actually happens almost every month now, thanks to Stu.
Just to that point, like, when it does backfire, and sometimes people put their own foot in it, like our mate Griffo, and he got lit up by a feminist, and they missed half the context, and then it hit mainstream media, and it's like it can be pretty damaging.
It is scary, you know? Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it
like is. It can, yeah. Especially if you, like I said, it takes fire.
You know what it is though, as well. Like I respect these guys a lot, like Adam, Eric, Perry, James, like Mark. They trust me with their brand. Like, it is a very big thing to do when you trust someone like me with your brand. That's why I'm willing to go to where it needs to be sometimes, but I'm also willing to be pulled back. Like, I don't take it like super personal sometimes when I get pulled back and go, you know what, like this is not the greatest to be uploaded. And I have had clips where I haven't uploaded them that probably get millions and millions of views.
Yeah, there's been times when Stu basically will just go, hey man, like I normally don't bother you on this, what do you think, right? And he's like, it's a bit crispy, isn't it? I'm like, mate, you're gonna burn people if you put that up, like just leave it for now, mate. And he's like, okay. I was like, I would say yes, but everyone else would say no.
Yeah, so exactly,
let's say no for now.
And I'm not willing to go that far to like Like if you actually like the people, like you, I like the people I work with. Like I love working at Unemployed with you guys. Like it is for me, like gives me a lot of passion and meaning in life where I didn't really have that over the last like 2 years, right? Felt like a bit lost. So sometimes like you gotta know when to bring it in a little bit. You know, you don't want to destroy the brand chasing views, because then you'll just be chasing views for your whole life.
So Stu, when you sit down, you know, your job, a lot of your job at the moment is seeing a podcast like today. Can you walk us through your mindset and process a little bit of like, so you get a 90-minute podcast like the one that was out recently with Topher Field that came out on Tuesday.
Yes.
One of the best pods I've seen in ages.
Great pod,
I absolutely love Topher as a guest. Like, what? Just explain to the listener, what are you thinking when you sit down with that? What's your priorities? How do you do it? And what do you actually will produce out of the back end of a podcast? And then how do you distribute it?
I think the better way to do it maybe as well is just to bring it one step backwards, so it makes sense, not just for people that have podcasts, but like for business owners and people that have brands or whatever, because I've seen this happen over the last like 6 months. Brands are moving towards YouTube. Like you'll see like Visa Card has a YouTube channel. Why? They have such huge market share. But what I just to answer the podcast question first, basically, a big part of it is just like I sit down and I look at it through the eyes of an average Australian. I am living in Australia. This is what's happening in Australia. And a big thing for me is like, if I hear something, I'm like, that can't be true. Right? Like, or I ask myself, people need to know this. Like, this is not fair that people don't know that this is a thing that's happening. Like one of the clips that, for example, a good one was the recent one, I think, where you did, where it was like the Paul and Hanson one, the 40% of houses go in taxes and all that kind of stuff, right? We've had a few clips now that we've talked about that specific topic, and we've had rebuttals from people as well going, this is bullshit, this doesn't make blah, blah, blah. What's that guy's name? Punters Politics. He did a video responding to us talking about this situation, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason I put that clip up in the first place is when I heard it, I was like, this can't be real. There's no way we're paying 40% in taxes. Right. And then you clarified it in the other clip where you had that article, that financial article that you brought up. It is real. So I'm like, this is what people need to know. People need to hear this. This is like, it shouldn't be fair that this isn't being put out there so people, Aussies, Australians, can make a decision about this. Right. Because a lot of people, like, when you go, social media can be a gift and a curse at the same time. Right. You get really big podcasts that grow up, like built on foundations that, you know, sometimes we don't necessarily agree with, and they have a lot of the attention and viewership, right? And so they have a bias towards specific things, and then their audience will agree with the same thing. But where's the opposite side? And that's why I like to go in there and go, you know, where's this side of it where it's like we talk about these things? A lot of it is just like personal curiosity. Like I hear something, I'm like, wow, like I didn't know that was a thing. Let me clip it. Or like, oh, that needs to be said. That needs to be heard. Let's take it out and put it onto socials, right? That's where
you find that are supported by a credible source or by a credible person tend to have a viral nature built in. So when you talked about that, when I broke down the land tax state by state, I started by saying the housing and economics report produced by so-and-so has actually proven that what Pauline Hanson said about 40% of tax is correct. Let me run through the stats from that report. And bang, now it's not a character assassination of me. Like, who's this fucking Bugs Bunny with an opinion? It's all bullshit. But when I cite the report at the start and reference Pauline Hanson, all of a sudden now they see past my teeth and they see past all that and they start listening, because you framed that clip with you created a frame at the start. Or you've got a guest who doesn't need to be framed, like Pauline Hanson and you're also very good at like knowing that that's a really raw thing. Like when you had Kevin Dudney on and he talked about that clip that went massive and he talked about the banks.
Yeah, that clip got 5 million views.
5 million views from one clip. Now, if you saw 5 million people, that's 20% of the country.
Yeah, yeah. And another one example, so that's one side of it, right? Being like having that connection to it, all that kind of stuff, being like, okay, people need to know this. Why isn't this being talked about? There needs to be opposite discussions had about specific topics. But then you can do a whole 360, like Mr. James over here with his clip that I put out, where he was just talking about an opportunity that Aussies didn't know about. that got half a million views, right? So it's both sides of it, right? It's not just like, let's just go for clickbait and controversy and all that. That you need to do that sometimes, to be fair. Like, you need a bit of that to actually get people to care. But what happens is, like, when you go viral, a percentage of those people like you, right? Regardless. So even if you have a million people that hate you, but you get, once again, you get 100,000 people that like you, that's where the growth happens. That's why there are a lot of these podcasts that are in Australia that know who we are, and they're copying our models and stuff, you know?
Go ahead, Gary. The thing is as well, we've got 329 posts on Instagram alone, yep. Right? We've got 130 plus podcasts on YouTube. You know, these are all from testing. You know, there's podcasts that are like types and column, like, that we're not going to do anymore because we just see that the viewership's not there. Right. Yeah. It's not that we don't want to do that, but it's just we have to, if we're going to expand and grow, we have to listen to what our audience is saying. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, Stu gets, you know, every 10 clip, every 20 clip, he gets an absolute killer. But in between those, he's getting 2,000, 10,000, yeah, 5,000 views. And all of those still stack up.
Yeah,
this is what people don't understand. Right? You get 10,000 a clip, you know, 2,000 a clip. That's still a lot of eyes organically every single year.
Like, that's a lot of businesses get this wrong when it comes to social media. Like, oh, I only got 300 views. Did you pay for 300 views? No, right? You got it for free. You earned that, right? And as you grow and you stay consistent, I always say best practice, because best practice is what is foundational for unemployable. Like, bro, E-Star was posting. I don't miss a day ever, right? I work 7 days a week with unemployable, the stuff that we do. Why? Because you can't have your finger off the pulse. And a lot of Australian businesses, content doesn't work for me. Social media doesn't work for me. You posted once. How are you telling me it doesn't work for you? I posted more in 1 week than you've posted this whole month. Like, that's a big thing. A lot of this mentality in with content is like, it doesn't work for me. Well, it works for 3,500 businesses in Australia. Why can't it work for you? I don't understand.
What are you saying? Go ahead, James.
So, as I said, I think one of the key words that Perry said, and I think you alluded to it previously, Adam, about a mistake, is the word organically. And that was the big clanger.
Let's jump into that in a minute. But I just, before we move on to that organically mistake, I want to just drop a note in here, because when Stephen Bartlett came to Australia, for those of you who don't know who Stephen Bartlett is, he's a diary of a CEO, second biggest podcast in the world, 50 million views a month. It's insane. Mm-hmm. And we paid VIP to meet Stephen backstage on the tour. And I said, Stephen, we've just started Unemployable. He said, how many subs have you got? And I think we had 200 subs at that time. It was like brand new. And he said, how long have you been going? I said, like 2 months. He said, well, you're about double what I had at that point. And he said, the number one tip that I can give you is, if you say you're going to put out a podcast every Tuesday at 9 a.m., you put that podcast out every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Because what's going to happen is, you build your audience, they're going to build you into their lives, and they're going to expect a certain level of content production, and you train yourself into their lives. And now, then we went from Tuesday to a Tuesday, then a Friday, and now we're producing more shows. But that consistency is what is the piece, right? Like, before we rolled tape here, we thought, well, you know, how much do we want to reveal here? You know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we have an abundance mentality. There's a whole world out there. But to do what we're doing, like turning up every single week to get every dollar that we generate through coaching, none of the directors, none of the shareholders have taken a cent, and we've put well over $1 million into the podcast, which has been generated through coaching and advertising and different things, but nothing has come out. It's all gone straight back into working 7 days a week and scaling and getting better. So very few people are willing. And it, maybe Stu, you could just talk about, or Perry maybe might be,
I just want to listen. Yeah, I want to say on that as well, just in regards to, like, look, it's the same thing as me contacting James and Mark and you guys and going, oh, by the way, you've got podcasts next week, right? And now you've got to travel over to the podcast studio. Sometimes you're not in the complete mood to do it. Once you get there, all good. But it's, again, you know, it's the whole management of this process and just making sure everyone's available and you know, everyone's in good spirits. It's a task. It's a massive task. And you know, I kudos to anyone who starts a podcast or media and just keeps going, because you will get velocity.
It's not easy.
I'll do a quick call out here, and I'm going to do it on the socials as well, because this will be out on Friday. What we're looking for right now is a booker. So what is a booker? So we want somebody to reach out on a targeted basis to our hit list of dream guests, our dream 100, and just keep reaching out to get these people to pay attention and say, hey, look, we want you on the pod. Can we get you into our pod? And then to we get inbound inquiries from people wanting to be on the pod all the time. And then we meet and we say, all right, this one. But the actual process of like booking that person and getting them to the studio and the logistics and the timings and the details of what to wear and what time. So if you're watching this and you or someone you know, we're looking for somebody who would fit our culture, which is unemployable, right? That's what we're looking for. Someone with a bit of edge, spark, a people person that loves the details and loves organizing logistics. This job is completely from home. And it's probably 20 hours a week. Did we say 10 or 20 hours a week, Perry?
Yeah, about 10, 20. Just call it 20 hours for now, yeah.
10 to 20 hours max. So in that range, it could be a stay-at-home parent who's out of a small business or out of corporate and is just looking for something to work around a good crew. If that's you, write us a one-page cover letter. Don't worry about the resume and all that bullshit. Actually, no, don't do that. Make a Loom video of yourself and then send a link of you just talking down the barrel saying, hi, I'm Claire or I'm Simon or whatever. I saw the pod and I heard it or I heard about it on socials and I'm interested in doing that job. And it's basically booking people like we've had Gerard Rennick, Topher Field, and you'll be working with their people and getting arranged and we're looking for that person now.
Yeah, so just for anyone who knows, Loom is loom.com and it allows you to basically create video content or a short 5-minute video, which is all we'd need. And then if you just send it to my email address, which is perry@unemployable.com.au and then Jerome, if you can just throw that up on the screen for everyone, that would be super helpful.
Yeah, Perry's name is on the screen there, P-E-R-Y-E, perry@unemployable.com.au. Maybe you guys could talk quickly to the growth journey. Like if we were to look at the stats, Stu, if you were to go back to the start or Perry, go back to look at like day one. And I did this the other day. I texted it in the WhatsApp group to everybody in the unemployable team. And I said, guys, look at the views a year and a half ago. Like there was 38 views and 110 views. Like how would it look on a curve basis? Like now versus like we're adding probably more people per week than we were adding in a quarter at the start, I would imagine. Yeah. Now,
yeah,
what's that journey like?
I like to look at it kind of like a snowball, right? At the beginning, it just rolls down the mountain, but it's by the end of it where it becomes this big, like it, you know, like thing at the end. Like that's the thing with YouTube as well. It's a slow game at the beginning. I just like to say that YouTube tests you. They give you views, they take away views, they give you impressions, boom, out of the way. Okay, some views get zero views and then the rest get thousands, whatever. I see it like a test. It's a test of strength anyway with YouTube because are you willing to commit, right? Everybody wants to do podcasts. Everybody wants a podcast. Everybody wants to do YouTube. I think the most valuable job, like the kids at these age wants, they all want to be streamers and YouTubers, right? So the barrier to entry is low because anybody can upload a video, right? So it's like you have to stay consistent. So at the beginning, it's super slow, not a lot of views, not a lot of traction. And it just sucks, right? Because you're pouring thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and it just doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. But then you hit a little hockey stick and you're like, oh, okay. Like now it's kind of like the channel's monetized. It's making money. The views are coming through. And then you start to see how big it truly can get as you have lots of pieces of content that are evergreen, bringing in people, new people all the time. Your new videos are getting more impressions, more people are sharing it, more people are talking about it. You see it as this, everybody trusts unemployable more now than they did in the first week, even though you guys had crazy business stories and experiences. Why? They see you, they trust you, they like you. They spend 2 hours a week with you, us, unemployable. And that's when it starts to ramp up and becomes like a big snowball. It's like a hockey stick. So you go, it goes like that and then woof.
Up. What would it be, Stu, like this week, to put perspective on it, across the Tuesday, Friday, a Bitcoin pod, and then socials and reels and everything, roughly per week. Do you have any idea, like, now per week, the views that we're getting?
I think we're doing roughly 180,000 views, 150,000 views a month on YouTube.
Yeah, 128K.
Like, it depends on the month and the podcast you release. And then social media, it's a mixed bag. Some months are better than others. Like last month or the month before, we did 8 million views just that month only. Like, I'm telling you, a lot of the growth that we've had is now. Last 6 months is where we've really exploded, because we've done all that bullshit at the beginning, which is just eating dirt. You know, like Carsten says, cutting your teeth. I like that saying, right? A lot of cutting your teeth, getting it set up and all that kind of stuff. And we weren't even doing social media, right? I remember, Adam, when we started off, we weren't even touching socials.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't touch socials till November last year. So
It's six months ago, by the way, for those listening. So it's 7 months ago, we just were releasing the pod on YouTube and Spotify with no Instagram account, no TikTok account, no Facebook account. And now on Facebook, we're getting millions of views on Facebook.
Yeah. It's kind of like, to me, it's like, I don't like to say what if. What if is like the worst, because we learn from our mistakes, right? Like, what if we started the Mediums channel when we started off? Remember the first day I came, I set up a Mediums channel and I set up a normal channel. We're doing Mediums now, but what would have been the compounding growth of a year and a half of Mediums? Would it be at 50K subs by now, or would it be 100? It's always those thoughts that go through my brain. But at the end of the day, we're here right now. We're starting from now.
You said a few things, Stu, there. So there's, with a podcast, there's three forms of content we're getting out of it. We're getting short form, which is like the reels and Instagram reels and YouTube shorts. Then we got medium, which we're just starting, which is where we get an hour or a 2 hour podcast, and we cut it into like 10 minute segments.
8 minutes, 10 minutes, roughly, 15 minutes. Yeah.
Basically, where we're talking about a subject within the pod. Topic, and then we slice it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we got the long form, and you got different types of viewers across. The other thing you said is that we, the channel gets monetized. What does monetized mean for a listener?
So a monetized channel is a guide, so when you start off YouTube, you start off, you're not making any money. Everybody sees, oh, Mr. Beast makes $1 million a day from YouTube. Or like, these guys make how much money from YouTube? Where are they making this money? So monetization is just when your channel reaches a threshold and is abiding by the guidelines of YouTube, they actually monetize your videos, meaning they put ads. Do you know how when you watch a video and you have the ad at the beginning, right? That's what it means to get monetized. And when you get monetized, only 6% of channels ever get monetized. It is a very difficult process because of how many people give up and all that kind of stuff, right? So let's say, for example, you're a part of that 6%. What YouTube does is they split the ad revenue of the ads that are running your videos 50-50. So if, like, for example, a lot of entrepreneurs run ads to our channel, like, you'll see a lot of the people that have ads before our video plays are going to be entrepreneurial or business related. Why? It's because they've identified that our channel is a channel that has entrepreneurs. Our audience is a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners or people with wealth. And so they want to run those ads on our channel. Whereas, for example, let's say Mr. B's channel probably doesn't get an entrepreneurial audience because he's got more of a generalized audience. So they run, for example, like toy ads, or they run like Pepsi ads or KFC, for example, because they know it's a bigger, more generic, general audience. And so to get monetized just means you've hit the program and they're starting to pay you from those ads to get run.
I've got a channel that's just a little travel channel, right? And when I log into YouTube Studio, which is the back end, it says, "Hey, Adam, keep going. You're going to be monetized soon." And what it says is, you know, you either have X amount of views of your short form content or X hours of views of long term form content. So once you've got enough subscribers and followers watching your content, YouTube goes, "All right, this person has a channel that has been consistent. It's got enough views now, and we're going to insert Flight Center ads in because it's a travel company, right? A travel channel." And then those ads that keep annoying you, the revenue that the company paid, YouTube give you 50% commission for producing the content. So you produce the content, YouTube shares the ad revenue with you. If you're watching this and you hate watch all the ads that YouTube's cutting in, don't put in our comment section,
"It's not
the ads, guys." Yeah. You know, like, there were so many people saying, "Just cut the ads." You know, I'm like, dude, it's not us doing it. It's YouTube doing it. If you don't want the ads, pay YouTube $10 a month, and then you don't get the ads.
The worst part about it is, when Perry, I'll let Perry say it, because we spoke about this before.
And we've tested it. I was seeing those comments and I was going, oh gosh, like I don't want us to be, you know, getting ads and people complaining about it. So I went into the back end trying to figure out how to sort it out. And you know, I cut some of the ads out, which was a pain in the ass, absolute pain in the ass. And our reach tanked. Because YouTube isn't making more money off us. So why would they share us?
Yeah, what's the point?
Yeah, that's right. It's a partnership.
Yeah.
So guys, and understanding also back catalog, you know, like, you know, when you've got 130 videos on YouTube and not one, like we're putting now, we're between shorts, mids and longs, we're putting up, you know, a lot of videos every week. But I don't know how many videos we've got in total across everything. But when you've got, over 1,000. Okay, so we have over 1,000 videos out there. Some of these videos are getting 5 views a day. Other ones are getting 100 views a day, right? Some are getting 1,000 views a day, right? And so, but when you've got 1,000 of these assets out there that are accruing views and ads running on them, this stuff starts to add up. So you start to snowball and compound your ad revenue. Somebody like Patrick Bert David, who we follow, he's got, I think I looked the other day, 5 billion views now on the channel. And he has 70 editors, 70 full-time people editing content to go onto his channels. And, you know, he's just opened, just bought a, you know, a massive airport facility with private jet parking and basketball court and gym and everything inside. Just his ad revenue and his merch revenue. I mean, we did some numbers on his merch revenue. It'd be $15 to $20 million a year just in selling just baseball caps.
He's got
one of the largest business consulting groups in the world. So it's not easy. It's consistency and it's knowing who your audience is and then having somebody in your organization like a Stu who is a savage and is and you know what I am trying to encourage us to do now is start working with others that are at a high level and collaborating and having an abundance mindset because that's where it's at. So what, Stu, in your opinion or Perry, like what's our biggest mistake and second biggest mistake that we've made since we started?
I'll let Mr. PB go first.
No, Stu, you crack on first because I want to see which one you think is the biggest mistake.
Okay, cool. Just to preface all of this, by the way, guys, like YouTube, I want to say before anything else that I love the journey we've been on because we disagree. We're not yes men. That's what I like about Unemployable. Like if I disagree with someone or someone disagrees with me, we're not scared to be like, hey, you're being a dumbass. This is wrong. Or we don't want to do it like that, obviously. So that, I want to say that on all of the things that we've done.
It's true. Just pulling on that then, that means that this, whatever you're going to say now is going to be really hurtful to someone, right? Because you have to preface it with a compliment sandwich, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I would say
it's that time of year again at Unemployable where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period. And with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
I think the biggest mistake we made, and it was the first thing I did when I came into the business, right? Like for me, it was, I think it's this, like, yeah, I mean, the ads are the one part of it. And I think Perry might touch on the ad stuff, right? The biggest mistake I think we made was not compounding medium clips from day one. Like, because I don't know where we would be if we did. Like, I think, I don't like to live in what ifs. But I know, like, that's why I introduced it as soon as I got there. Because I knew, like, this would be the model that would get us to, like, a lot of distribution very quickly. Because the compounding effect is something you still got to eat. And we're doing it right now with the medium clips. They're getting no views, right? Because we still have to build a dead channel, right? It's going to have to take time. It's going to have to pump down. It's going to do. It's going to take, bro. It could take up to a year,
yeah,
even though we have a popping channel. So that's the biggest. That's the biggest thing that I think our mistake was. And how does this apply to everybody out there? I've done YouTube for 10 years. Like, and these boys know, like, I've done probably over 400 million views. But I never, like, I never compounded those views on my brand. So nobody knows who I am. But if I did it, I might be at the same place Stephen Bartlett was with his own, like, podcast and all that kind of stuff, right? So it's like, same thing with any person's business or personal brand. What is the impact of you not compounding media from day dot from your business? What is that going to have? Like, what's that impact in a year's time? Because the cost of Facebook is going to keep going up. Cost of ads are going to keep going up. It's going to be more competitive. More people are going to enter the market. So you're better off just compound from now while you have the chance still, because these platforms, the way that they're built right now is basically like, if you make good enough content, you will get views, right? So it's already in your benefit. You just have to start just like doing and compounding. That's what I would say.
So just quickly on that, you talked about growing a mid-form channel. So there's three distinct distinct separate channels that are not correlated, have no overlap at all, other than your brand awareness.
If you look at it like a funnel, I look at socials as top of funnel awareness. Then the medium clips are people that are interested, but they're not willing to spend an hour, 2 hours to watch a podcast. They just don't have the time. So they want to lock into 10-minute clips, finish work, 10-minute clip. Great. Learn a subject. And then the bottom of funnel is the podcast, where people are sitting down, they turn on their TV, they're not watching you on YouTube anymore, they're watching you on their TV screen, and they're tuning in every and so they are connected in the sense of that, but they are separate channels. Yeah,
they're separate. Yeah, YouTube channels, James. We actually have a clips channel, and then we have a main podcast channel. And it's not just about views, guys. The thing here is that it's about trust, and that's the part that we keep top of conversation. Is it's views is one thing, but views without credibility is worthless. And that's why you see a lot of young influencers that have massive followings but no trust or relevancy. So it's that balance, because we had like. To give you just a context of the value of trust, we've had guests on that have appeared for one podcast and made millions of dollars in sales off the one podcast, for real. So think about that for a second. What that would cost to actually buy that media, and not only, you have to buy it, but then you have to have the trust, right? Like if you go and buy a click off Facebook, there's no trust. There's just, you've got their attention for a brief moment. But when you've come onto a long-form pod and had a 90-minute discussion, and somebody's watched through that 90-minute discussion of you and your brand being on with three or four guys that they watch every single week, and like when I bump into somebody in the street, James, you're the same probably already. People have come up to you at the gym, and for them, it's like they know you, and they feel like weird. There's sort of this dissonance.
It's a parasocial relationship. Yeah.
So there's this trust that gets built. Like we feel like people's friends because we're in their ear twice a week for 90 minutes for our true fans. So there's a high level of trust. So that preservation of trust is really, really critical, but it's also really, really powerful when you get product market fit and you get somebody who comes along who's like Brooke, when Brooke came on and talked about remote selling from Bali, specifically focused on women. Oh my God, like she got inundated and her community went from 90 women to 700 women or 600 women or whatever it was, just poured in because she's trustworthy and she hung out with three or four guys on the pod that people trust. So the power of that trust is really, really important as well. And so it's that constant balance and so on, but this is, I hope this conversation for you listening is starting to understand, is not an easy path. But in that business that Perry talked about, that where he first came and worked for me at Unreliable, we spent $300,000 a month on ads. And so to get attention. So $3.5 million a year on advertising. Eric spends, I think, $15 million a year right now. In his business. Eric's not on the pod today. For those of you watching us for the first time, Eric's one of the co-owners of Unemployable and a regular on the pod. He has a company called MX Store. It's the biggest motocross store in Australia online, $100 million a year in sales, but they spend 10 to 15 million a year on ads. So what we've got here is organic attention. And so when we started, we thought, you know, what we'll do is we'll create content and then we'll, and this might be our second or third biggest mistake, but we thought what we've got to do to get credibility is we've got to get views on the on the podcast straight away. So we spent our own money to pay for ads, and Stu oversaw that and did a terrific job of getting views. But that's why when we first started out, if you go right back to the early videos, many of them you'll see 40, 50,000 views on. That was all paid attention.
So free Stu comments.
With three comments. And that speaks to paid attention versus earned attention. And I remember that day where we sat down and I said, guys, I think we've got to turn these ads off. Let's get pure. Let's actually see how good we are. And oh my God, it was hard.
It was
because Eric, you go ahead, Perry. Maybe you can talk about it.
Eric calls me up and he goes, fuck, man. Like, I felt like I was the king and everything was great. And then now there's five people watching our show. And I was like,
dude, it's like coming off the juice, right? Like you've been hitting it with the roids. And you walk in and like, all right, I'm going to cut the roids off. And all of a sudden the tide goes out and we see who's been swimming naked. That was us, right? We were like, oh, shit. Like all of a sudden our viewers are going to see that we'd pump these numbers up with paid media. And we went from like 50,000 views an episode to 500. Mm-hmm. And it was like a kick in the nuts and the guts at the same time. But we were like, no, this is real, right? Now we got to earn the attention. And now, like when a pod comes out, we get regular 5 to 20,000 views organically. And then we get an outlier that's 50 or 100 or 200,000. And we're not spending anything on ads. And I think YouTube's actually rewarding us. Maybe you could comment on that, guys.
Yeah. I mean, the hard part is that, once again, those first 6 months, 12 months, it was hard. Right. I remember sending an email to you guys as well. I was like the impressions are like destroyed here. Mm-hmm. Like we're getting maybe 1,000 impressions on a video. The Clips channel was getting more impressions.
Just people. Do you want to explain what impressions are?
Yeah. So I talk a lot of jargon. I forget sometimes, but I feel like, so impressions are basically when YouTube has your video pop up on the sidebar or on the homepage. That counts as an impression. And then your click-through rate or your CTR, similar to an ad, is like when people actually click on the video and watch.
So like, what that means is that if you get 100 impressions, it means it's being presented to 100 people.
Yeah.
The thumbnail.
Yes, the thumbnail. And then obviously that works backwards and that obviously has an impact on the algorithm and how many more impressions you get. It's a whole thing. So one day I probably will explain how it all works to everyone here, but just to like super, like just to get on the top of it, it's just more like we were destroyed and the ads were a big part of that. And luckily though, like through good content, great packaging, thumbnails, headlines, we're able to dig ourselves out.
Yeah. And it was hard because, you know, like we had a studio that we rent the space where we are. We'd spent $250,000 fitting that studio out with audio equipment. It turns out half the audio equipment we got was wrong, and so we had to get rid of it all. It's still sitting in the fucking cupboard. Right, James? I mean, we had all totally. These things. And we had two full-time camera guys that were costing us nearly $200,000 a year. Perry was working for free as a sweat equity holder. When we hired Stu, he was on salary as well. And like, when you've got no money coming in and the first thing Stu says is, oh, wow, your channel's really dog shit. you know, like talk about Wizard of Oz shit, like pumping up your crappy numbers, right? So, and like, you know, luckily Eric and myself and Perry are kind of stoic, you know, in terms of, okay, well, how do we fix this and how do we keep going? And we have a low time preference, you know, in the Bitcoin universe, we talk about having a low time preference, which is, you know, it'll take what it takes. Don't stress about the time. Just have a low time. That's a stoic mindset. And when you're young, and I think for Stu, because he's half my age, he looks at like the last year and he's like, oh my God, we could be so much further down the road. And I'm like, Stu, don't worry, bro. Like, we'll be here in 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll look back. But for Stu, it's hard because he's young and aggressive. And that's where you need that balance of the young and the aggressive savage. And then you need the calm of the older heads. Yeah. And then Mark and James, thankfully, just agreed to keep showing up.
Yeah,
and just going with it, because we actually genuinely have a friendship between the four of us, and we liked going down every Tuesday morning to record a pod, and then we said, hey boys, you want to double it up and do a Friday pod as well? And we actually enjoyed it, and we made sure that, you know, we got people that could be in the studio. So there's sort of all of these parts to it. There's the friendship, there's the patience, there's the savagery of Stu, there's the good-natured peacemaker personality of Perry between us going, what the fuck is Stu doing? And then Perry being able to say, all right, I'm going to translate that. Stu, the boys have a few minor concerns.
Micro concerns.
You know what it is as well, bro? Can I be like 100% honest?
But if I
didn't work here, who could deal with a personality like mine? I'm very also like, I love Eric. I'm a fucking pain in the ass, and I have a big ego sometimes, right?
And I'm going to call you out. I'm going to call you out for something you said before. I don't take things personally. I've got bullshit. Everything's personal to you.
Everything's personal.
You should see the battles in the WhatsApp chat sometimes. You just sit back and get the popcorn. And go,
cool. He was experienced. He's passionate. Yeah. And, mate, it's personal, mate. Everything's personal. But the best people criticize me, and they say, Adam, you shouldn't be on social media if you're so sensitive. And I'm like, dude, the best teachers, the best musicians, the best artists are sensitive. They actually care.
Oh,
if you are, you know, you don't comment in the comments if you can't handle it. I'm like, no, fuck you. If you're going to comment and try and call me out, now I'm backing off now, sure enough, but you want people to care, right? Like, that Stu cares, right? Like, if somebody doesn't care, like, that's a problem. Like, look at what they did with Doge. You know, like Elon said, I think, what was it? Care and competence. That's the key message in government should be, like, get people that actually care and are competent, and that's it. And that's what I realized that we've got here. We've got people that care, and if you've got people that care and are good at what they do, you're gonna fight. It's just out
there. There was a time where, like, Adam was going gung-ho on comments. He just went fucking next level. And I remember just calling him up and just being like, hey, mate, you okay? It's like, you know, and I was like, yeah, but are you good? He was I'm fine. Just people. And I was like, yeah, I get it.
It's like that that comment with Ricky Gervais when he goes, shouldn't have responded, did. just fucking blows up.
No, I think Adam's responses are the funniest shit I read all day. They give me so much. I just look, I laugh because some of these people just don't know who they're commenting to and what you've done in your life. It's just such stupidity sometimes, right? But what I was trying to say before, it's like, you know, you need people to keep you in check sometimes, right? Like a hard thing was, like, I've been young and successful. I have a big ego sometimes. I ain't gonna lie. Like, obviously, it's what got me to where I am in my life anyway, right? But you need to be around people like Adam, James, Eric. Eric is a big one. We've had clashes all the time, but it's because we're very similar people. Yeah. Right, and I love that about us. Like, I call, like, Eric to me is like family as well. So it's like, for me, it's hard because you clash with your siblings sometimes, you know your cousins or whatever, right? But you guys have given me a chance to, like, do what I got to do, right? You guys trust me. That's the big thing with social media content. Everything else doesn't matter. Trust is a big thing, and also experimenting is a big thing. The one thing I want people to take away from this podcast, like, just so they have tangible values, like, at the end of the day, people care. You think people care more about the stuff that you do than they actually do. So just make that piece of content. We're all gonna grow old and all that kind of stuff, and have, you know, and no one's gonna care then. So just do, like, if you want to do content, do it. Do what you enjoy. Love the process. At the end of the day, I love what I do. Like, I get to look forward to every single episode coming out, being like, holy crap, what do we? And you guys message me going, that's going to be spicy. You're going to like it. Because I like it. I enjoy it. I love the process. And honestly, if it wasn't with Unemployable, I would literally be unemployable. There's no group of people like this that can actually work as cohesively as we do, you know. So
you touched on something there. I just want to double click on in the chat group. So for those listening, we have a private WhatsApp group for everybody involved with Unemployable, like the hosts and our back office team, like Perry and the whole team. But I put in there the other day into, I don't know if it was in the total group or just with Perry and Eric, but it was an interview that Fortune magazine did with Stephen Bartlett in London. And they walked through his studios, the new ones that they're building. It's crazy. They've got a rocket ship being built inside and the whole thing. It's nuts. And when they're walking past on the second floor where the social media team is, there's like 30 people just in content for socials. There's this big silver trophy, and he went over and grabbed the trophy and he said, do you know what this is? This is the Chief Failure Award. And this gets awarded to the team or the person that failed the most this week. Because if we're not failing, we're not learning. All the learnings are in the failures.
Yes.
And so we're constantly testing and iterating. And I think that's something that we're getting better at. And we're challenging each other to test things. So I put out the challenge the other day. I shared that, you know, with my own, so I use my own social media as like this little testing bed. So I've got 70,000 followers roughly. And I watched this young lady from California who's a social media influencer. And I thought, I want to do something to, I need to find a rhythm that fits me today, who I am today. Like I've tried different things. So I need to get advice. And then she said one thing that got my attention. This is just one example. And I know that if you watched the podcast last week, you might have heard this, but a lot of people probably didn't. She said, my most successful social media clips are 8 seconds long maximum, and I don't talk on them at all. They're silent with music. And I'm like, wait, what? She goes, those are my most successful. They go most viral. They're most engaged with. And I watched some of her clips. And her name's Maria Wendt, W-E-N-D-T, young girl. And so I did one, and all I did was I got my camera, and I live in Cyprus, as you guys know. Outside my window is the Mediterranean, so I panned out on that Mediterranean for 8 seconds, and then I put a quote over it, and then a meaningful like why I'm here and why I moved from thing Australia. And I put the phone down, went to bed, thought, nah, we'll see how it goes. I doubt it's going to do well, and. As I sit here today, that clip has had 265,000 views in 14 crazy. Days.
Yeah, right? It's crazy.
And that's so I thought, yeah. And so I thought, oh, wow, that worked. And at the time, my average clip was getting 5,000 views. And then I thought, I'll do it again and I'll do it again. I've been doing one a day. And now I'm getting average 15,000 to 30,000 views per silent 8 second clip.
That's awesome.
It's the reason I'm sharing this is it's testing and it's iterating. Perry said, all right, we've got to do something with our social media channel. So Stu's been punching up the clips out of the pod, but we're like, we need to break this up. We need some other forms of content in there and create a more diverse format. I'm not saying just be random. But for every clip that Stu puts up, we put up something else, whether it's a silent 8 second clip or it's a down the barrel clip from Perry or me or James or Mark. And Perry put his first clip up the other day, which was a down the barrel clip from Perry, 60 second thought in close range. And it's done really, really well, right? Like I think it was 12,000 views or something in the first day. So this constant iteration and learning is something. And then challenging each other. Like this morning when I got up, I texted the guys in the channel. I said a little bit of inspiration for everyone, and I just screenshotted my own Instagram, 597,000 views, 1,000 new followers in the last 30 days. So I said, there it is. And then Eric being Eric's like, right, I'm gonna beat you, you know, right? And then so we start this banter. And it's that internal competition and constant learning and constantly implementing and trying. And there's this element of accountability to one another that is also very, very powerful as well.
So someone who's starting out and they're wanting to learn how to do high engagement clips, I mean, I know you've got your secret sauce. I'm asking you to reveal that. But would it be advisable to go to YouTube, find a Patrick Bet David, find a Joe Rogan, find their clips, challenges, and just purely look at the views and go, and then put it in GPT and go, what made this clip pop? I mean, is that where you'd go for if we're going to give an education piece here to someone, what would it be?
I've actually spoke about this with the coaching clients as well. Like a big part of it is like, the recipe, I can give it to you right now. It's 5 steps. I can identify these 5 steps in every piece of content that goes viral, right? Number one, it's the hook. You need a strong hook or something. Like, for example, in Adam's post, the text, it's a strong hook. It gets people to read at least for a couple of seconds, increasing the watch time or getting someone to stop. The second part for me is you want to get people to engage. So have an opinion, like have something that people want, like either be, you know, like something that you said might get people to engage or something that adds value to someone's life that gets them to engage, right? The third part is creating value. It could be educational value, fun, entertainment value, informational value, whatever it is, it has to be valuable, right? If I watch a content, it's just a paint drying. What value do I get out of that? Nothing, right? Fourth one, it's posting everywhere. I don't care about the platforms at all, actually. I care more about being platform agnostic, which is what Raf would also say too. Like sometimes, like it's being platform agnostic. How does content work? Because these platforms are just distribution channels, right? TikTok distribution, YouTube distribution, but it's your content that is what actually works. And the final part, which is the recipe, is just everyday posting every day, because you have a lottery ticket and every day you have a chance to cash it in, right? And most times it doesn't cash in. But the 1 in 10 or the 1 in 20 where it does cash in makes leaps and bounds for your business. And I could tell this to entrepreneurs, people that want to do social media and all that kind of stuff, and they'll always have one of these 5 things, 2 of these 5 things missing.
Just to back that up, Stu, and I want to also, for the listeners who are business people going, oh, you know, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it? I'm going to do 2 things here. I'm just going to reiterate what Stu just said about the hook. So this piece of content that I mentioned on my Instagram, you can see that's the one that did 267,000 views, and it's been up for 2 weeks. You can see in the back of Instagram there, the white dotted line is my average reel and the pink is that reel, right? It shows how outsized the performance is. But one of the metrics, the first metrics that they show you is what percentage of your viewers watched this past 3 seconds, right? And it says here that this reel, 71.7% of viewers watched past 3 seconds. Now, I don't know how to take this because on all my other reels, it's my face, and this one's not my face.
hint.
So what is Instagram telling me about my head? But I was just going to show you, like, and this is it. 45% of the people who've watched it are non-followers, which is really interesting. But I want to show you one other metric that gets me really so this is just my general little account. I've got 70,000 followers, 597,000 views. But down the bottom here is the one that really gets me interested, which is profile visit, right? Mm-hmm. In the last 30 days. You can see it down the bottom there, profile visits. In the last 30 days, 9,300 people saw my content and then clicked through and went, who is this guy?
Yes.
9,000 people that didn't know me a month ago.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? To get 9,000 people's eyeballs on you or your brand for just doing an 8-second clip a day.
You can't say it better than that.
Just what I want to jump on that. I bet you the theory behind why 9,000 people have looked at that is that those 8-second clips are lifestyle clips, right? So you are in a scene which is beautiful. The location is nice. You're sitting, you're doing something, and then you're talking about a specific topic in the comment, right? The subject, sorry. So I think that people are visually seeing that and they're going, huh, who's this guy? What kind of life does he have?
Well, this is the thing, Perry, that's interesting is that they're not so much that. Like as in this one here is 34,000 views and I literally was sitting in the airport at a Costa coffee shop waiting for my plane and I just sat my phone next on the coffee cup and just filmed myself sitting there. Like, the sound's off. Look at that. If you're on Instagram.
Yeah, I remember that video.
That's all I'm doing. I'm just sitting there looking at nothing. There's no fancy background. I'm just the airport. This one here. What's that?
What would you class that as?
Just people being invited into my real world. This one here, I'm sitting on a park bench looking like Forrest Gump. I was sitting outside Buckingham Palace. Seriously, though, I'm in the gardens outside Buckingham Palace. But for everybody else looking at that, it's just a dude sitting on a park bench.
You know what it is as well? But you know what it is too? It takes them, you know, like the best part about why it works is retention is everything for these apps. And so if there's videos, I would love to test it with 6 seconds. I would love to see if you tested it with 6 seconds, if it actually increases your...
I am testing it, Stu. I was waiting for my Uber in the lobby of the hotel, just standing there with my suitcase. I think it was six. But the thing is, I put a long caption over it. Yeah. So what happens is people have to read the caption, and they start reading the caption, and then they're like...
Resets.
And then they go, oh, and it goes again, because they didn't get that side loops. So all of a sudden, the algorithm is going... Oh, this video, people are just watching it over and over.
300%.
You know, so the algorithm is then pushing it out. And what I'm seeing now is that the pie that splits followers from non-followers, my content's getting shown to more non-followers, which is what I want, because the algo is going, this video is being watched.
Yes.
So it's the video is not distracting, but it's personal. The hook is compelling. And what I've gone with is I thought, fuck it, I'm getting sick of business, if I'm honest, right? I'm moving into just pure investment now. I don't give a fuck about click-through rates and business and all that. I'm burned out. But what I do care about is personal fulfillment and happiness and things, right? So I just started posting real personal content around that, and my engagement and my views have doubled since I've done that. And the best part is I don't have to talk anymore. I can just write. And you can go to my Instagram and see it. It's amazing.
And not only that, the messaging in that, they're quite deep thought and impactful for someone who's engaged in your channel and they're there for a reason. So they resonate.
It's easier for me. Like, I'm enjoying doing it because it's authentic. And I think the authenticity part is real as well. Like, it's hard to do something like social media or a podcast for a long period of time if you're not authentically into it, which is why, like, I don't know that I'm going to keep my travel channel going, because I don't know that I'm going to keep traveling for that long, and I don't authentically like sharing that as much as I authentically like talking about Bitcoin or talking about this.
Double click. That's the one.
I thought you grew up on the internet, Stu.
Double click. Yeah, it's true. I grew up on the wrong side of the internet, by the way. James, did I answer your question before as well about what does someone like me actually like do and how?
Yeah, that's cool. I guess it's one thing you've got the five points there, but I mean to see that in action, you know, where people go, it's for a reference point, is you go watch a Joe Rogan clip or a CoffeeZilla clip or something, and find the top influencers on YouTube and go check out their clip channel, their mid-form channel, their long-form channel, and then look at the ones with the highest view. I'm not telling, I'm asking, by the way. And then you'll see what the winners are because of the viewership, right?
Yeah.
It's a good point there, and I agree with a lot of what you just said. I think looking at what the best in class are already doing is a very big thing. But let's say, for example, you don't want to be a podcaster or anything like that. You want to just do YouTube for business. Go look at the people that did content for business, like HiSmile. These guys dominated content for business. They understood what people wanted. Doesn't need to necessarily be, I want to be a podcaster, blah, blah, blah. No, like if you have a business that's an e-com product, you could learn a lot from HiSmile and how they do content, right? Or if you're a lawyer, there are so many lawyers on TikTok and Instagram that just do
killing it. Legal Eagle and stuff
Legal
like
Eagle
that.
And all of them. Or for example, like you're a service-based business, like everyone here knows the TikTok inspector. The guy who goes and looks at houses and sees how shit the houses are and stuff like that. He probably gets a ton of traffic for his business. Why? Because he just makes cool content about what he does. Like if you're a carpenter or a cleaner or whatever you are, there is an opportunity for you to make content about that business, because at the end of the day, not everybody's a carpenter.
And then for the people out there that are thinking, okay, cool, this is something I want to go and pursue. I mean, Stu, do you actually grab the clips and make the clips yourself and upload them? Or do you have someone you ship the editing out to? And what do people actually need?
Yeah, like I do. Like now, I'm getting to a point where I'm not, because it's like I like obviously my time needs to be more spent on the strategic side of things. For the most part, if you're just starting off, you should learn how to do basic editing. Adam here, and I respected him in the group chat for this because he learned how to edit. And everybody thinks editing is hard. Adam, you can talk to me about it a little. It takes probably 2 or 3 hours to learn how to do basic cuts, right? Yeah. So like that, people use that as like, oh, I can't do it because I don't know how to edit. It takes 10 minutes to make an edit. It also takes like a day max to learn how to edit.
The harder thing is if you're doing long form is actually finding the clips that can go. But, and it's funny because Carson called me earlier. Carson, who's part of Unemployable Property, he called me earlier and went, hey, so I sat down and I spoke to Stu about this. And so I spent 2 to 4 hours trying to find Medium clips, and now I realize what he does, and kudos to Stu.
You
just go in and just find clips, and you get into a flow with it, but yeah, so it was quite funny.
No, I love that. He called me. Yeah, he's like, oh, I have such a newfound respect for what you actually do. I'm like, it's not easy, bro. It's not easy.
It's a lot of watching. And the tools that there's some great tools. Like there's one tool out there that is called CapCut.
Love CapCut. Love it.
CapCut is so easy to use. And if before you go, well, just go to YouTube and go, how to use CapCut. And learn, just it's free. Just spend an hour and you'll be a CapCut expert. And then edit a few videos. And then become obsessed with it for 5 minutes. And this is the thing, you gotta notice what's working and then get obsessed with it. So like last week I saw those baby videos, right? Like everybody's got the baby podcast videos going around. And I said to the guys, I'm gonna learn to do those baby videos and and I'm gonna figure it out. And like I went straight to YouTube, found a guy that says, here's how you make baby podcast videos. And all you do, as it turns out, is you go to ChatGPT. You upload a photo of the person, say, turn this person into a baby, and then put them in a podcast studio with headphones on. And then it goes, okay, and then it produces a photo. And then you say, okay, zoom out a bit or whatever and get the photo. And then you go to Hedra and you upload into Hedra, which is just an AI video platform, and you've got the audio clip. And it was easy because Stuart already made the clips on YouTube. So I just grabbed the clip off YouTube, grabbed the audio, extracted the audio using iMovie, put the clip up and the photo, and then I use the prompt on Hedra. Please make this baby talk and gesture like they're on a podcast. Bim, hit the button. 30 seconds later, I get this, and I'll show you this first one I did just quickly, and I'll tell you what happened, which is funny, right? So this guy's name is Tony. So Tony was on our podcast. He's a Bitcoiner, and he's like a really passionate Lebanese guy, you know, and he's really gangster. Like he's guy. A gangster, he's ultra masculine, and he hates the banks, right? And he's bald, which made it even better. And so, and he's a mate of mine, and and he's a full-on freak. So I made this clip of Tony saying how much we're getting fucked over by the banks. Just if you can't see this, you'll hear it, but I'll play it to you so you can see it.
You have to work like a donkey, essentially, from 9 to 5 for money that isn't money. To put it in a bank takes the money from you.
So we could put it in post. But anyway, I want to tell the story, because what happened was I got that video and I texted it to Tony on his WhatsApp. I said, Tony, I just clipped this. I said, baby Tony's got some attitude, right? He loved it. He got the clip and he punched it straight out to his entire Twitter following and tagged the podcast to promote our podcast. And then I've said to the boys here, I'm going to make a few more of these. And so I started making, I made one of Prince Philip, who was on our podcast.
Yeah.
And I interviewed Prince Philip of Serbia, and I turned him into a baby with the glasses and everything. And I sent it to Prince Philip, and then I sent it to the Dutton brothers. And so these guys have got these baby videos, and they're texting me back, oh, this is hysterical. And they start posting their baby video clip from our podcast, linking back to their episode on the pod. Mm. And these are costing us $5. Less than $5 a clip on Hedra, because you have to pay Hedra to make it. It's nothing, a few dollars. But I got these clips that are viral, and I'm sending them to all my past guests saying, hey, this is funny. Post it if you want. Here's the link to the original pod, or just it's a gift from us. Like, I didn't really directly ask for it. But I'm not a video guy, but it's having that attitude of like, these are hilarious. I've seen them. How do they get done? And then just going right there in the minute and getting it done. I wanted to share quickly a quick experience because bringing it back down to grassroots reality here.
Can I add something to what you just said, though?
Yeah.
Quickly, you're curious.
Yeah.
The hard part is you can't teach curiosity.
Yeah.
Like, you wanted to know. I'm the same as you. All of us are similar, but that's why we're like, that's the thing is, like, you have to be curious. You have to want to know and learn and be engaged and active. That's all I would say as well to that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I just want to share one more story before we wrap this up on this, just to bring it down to grassroots. So, Josh, you guys all know Josh. My son, Josh, he's 26 years old. He was a boat builder. So he's got his trade in boat building. He's now starting his own e-commerce business. And he's selling nose strips and sleeping hot chocolate and a few other things. He's only got the nose strips right now. The hot chocolates are due to arrive shortly. And he's also got a natural energy lifting drink. Anyway, so the brand's called Restora, R-S-T-O-R-A, right? And you can go to his Instagram if you want to see this. So Josh is not a natural camera guy, right? He's probably a bit like you, James, right? He's 4 years in the trades, right? Working around tradespeople in the fiberglassing and things like that. So he has to learn social media. And I'm like, bro, you need to make your first reel, right? To build, you just need to start getting content out. Exactly what Stuart says, make the content. People don't care as much about you as you think they do. So he goes home, he gets his camera, and he goes, all right, guys, and he's watched loads and loads and loads. Like, everybody, he doesn't want to look like an idiot. So he's watched heaps and heaps of other brands. And then he's made his first reel, right? And then he sends it to me after it's produced and it's on his TikTok and it's on his Instagram. He says, what do you think, right? And I'm like, Josh, first of all, I am massive respect for the fact that you did this. Like, you actually turn the camera on yourself with the record button going and you film. That's so hard. So well done for doing that. And then I went through and said, all right, here's how we can improve this, right? And it was little things like the hook's not strong enough, right? We need a more compelling hook. And there's two aspects to the hook. There's what you say and there's where you are, right? There's what you see and what you hear, right? Mm. So let's get you in a place that's more compelling. And the words have got to be, don't start with, hi, I'm Josh. Nobody gives a fuck that you're Josh, right? Do you suffer from bad sleep? Boom, exactly. There's a hook. So let's do that. And then what I want to do is I want to speed up the clip by 1.2, right? So instead of running at one time speed, crank it up to 1.2 and just see what it sounds like, because you speak quite slowly. We want the energy amped up. Then what I want you to do is go through CapCut, and I want you to cut out these pauses. There's these like half second pauses, which is sort of making it feel a bit drawn out. Cut through all those half second pauses and compress it. And I want you to move the camera in and out. So just pop in a little bit closer to you and then pop out again. Using CapCut, you'll learn how to do this. And I said, rather than me telling you, I just did it to the clip. Now look at this, your clip versus my clip. My clip's 30% shorter because of the speed change, because of the tightening of the editing, and look how much more engaging it is. And I put some B-roll over the top. Here's a video on YouTube of how you can do it. And then he goes, holy shit, it looks completely different. It feels completely different to watch. And so he went from here to here in like that. And now I said, now, Josh, you've got to do two of these a day. Not because you're wanting to get anything other than you developing this skill. And now he's like challenging himself. And I've put him in a mastermind. So I've got five guys on the Gold Coast that are all e-commerce sellers in physical products like him. Before I left, I connected them all together. I said, this is Josh, this is James Esler, this is Josh. Then we got the guy who was on the pod that has the supplements business on the Gold Coast. I texted them all and said, you're all under 30, you're all smart, you're all in e-commerce, get down a coffee shop next week and commit to meet each month. And now they're meeting and they've got a private chat group and they're texting each other their reels. And they're critiquing their reels and their short form content and saying, you got a stronger hook, change the background. And now they're just elevating. So we're creating like what Mr. Beast had at the start. Mr. Beast had like a stew and three other guys, and they were just psychos who obsessed over YouTube. And then within months, they look back and I said to them all, if you're not embarrassed by the first pieces of content that you put out, then you just started too late. James Esler, who's I'm going to give a shout out, he's one of our coaching clients, he's a dentist. And he's learning this stuff the first time, and he's got these pouches that are, because as a dentist, all these nicotine pouches are destroying people's gums, right? And so he sees them and he's treating them and he's developed a natural solution to that. He's got a TikTok video now. He had his first 1,000,000 TikTok video. But he's a dentist. He's never created content before. You're going to say something, Stu?
That was after our coaching call with him. Remember that, Perry?
Yeah. Yeah, so you guys coached him, and now he's got his first TikTok over 1,000,000. Now his TikTok following starting to really compound. And so all I'm getting at here in a real world sense, guys, is you are going to suck. You're going to be like Josh, who's going to be nervous, who's built boats for a living his whole life. But the courage that it takes, like, it's a fantastic book by Seth Godin called The Icarus Deception. It's a short book. Yeah, and it celebrates the courage of being an artist. If you publish anything, whether it's music, a reel on social media, start a business, that is a form of publishing. And it puts you in the spotlight. It puts you in the arena. It puts you in a place where you are going to be judged. It is incredibly, incredibly courageous. And so here at Unemployable, we are rooting for you. We are in the stands pushing you on and cheering for you. We are not in the stands booing you, but it takes courage. But listen to what Stu said. Go and obsess over how the best in the business do it. I said to Josh, follow Clutch Glue. Like, I don't know if that pod's going out yet, but the young lady who runs Clutch Glue, you know, who we had on, that Aussie girl.
Views, by the way, on David, from the guy from Woody's personal brand channel. She had 50 million views on that reel. I remember seeing it.
Who's that?
Clutch Glue. Yeah, she had 50 million views. I don't know if it's all organic, but it looked organic to me. And it was millions
of young Aussie female.
She's amazing.
Clutch Glue, she's amazing. And I said, watch her. Watch the girl from CMY Cubes that was on our podcast.
Gabby,
amazing. Follow her channel. Watch what she's doing. And I said, Josh, you are not going to see the payoff of this financially for at least 6 months. Yeah, but you've got to learn this skill. If you learn this skill, in 6 months, you'll start getting people buying your shit without having to advertise because they trust you.
Because Stu knows this, but I haven't told anyone else. I've been building out a channel of content that it's completely separate from a product or anything like that. It's not going to be selling anything, but I'm doing it as a proof of concept to show what happens when you post every single day high quality content. And the goal is to get that to, you know, a high velocity pretty rapidly. So again, it's just going from the teachings that we've learned from being an unemployable.
Yeah, that's it. You've just got to keep being consistent and be prepared to suck at the start, you know. You're going to. I was just looking back at our early pods and man, like, we sucked. That's how it is, guys, you know. Like, and to get, again, just for the business people listening to this, right, I'll tell you quickly the power of it. Like, I've been chipping away at my social media and, just on, you know, my Instagram. And that's how we financed the pod, was from business coaching. And I had people who had followed me for ages, said, guys, I'm going to do business coaching. I didn't think I would go back to coaching. I'm doing it for 1 year. It's going to finance the podcast. I'll work with you. And I did it just on Instagram. I didn't even put up a landing page or a video or a coaching offer. I just did it all through DMs. And if people DM'd me and said, I want to join your coaching, which was 25 grand, DM me and set up a time to have a chat with me. We'll talk. If you feel it's a fit after we've chatted, I'll send you a payment link. We didn't even have a website, nothing, just DMs. I did it all through Instagram. We did $700,000 in sales in a week, just purely from Instagram. And that was 18 months ago. My Instagram account's bigger. You know, we've had people, as I said, come onto our pod and do millions of dollars of sales off one pod by being a guest, right? So this is the power of trust, and trust is earned through consistency, right? It's earned through messaging and authenticity and all these things. So yes, it's a longer game, and I know there are people going, forget all that, just paid media, go big, you know? But ultimately, the biggest people in the world have done it through organic and trust. And that's why people pay. Like, Mr. Beast is, you know, second biggest chocolate company in the world, right?
Youngest self-made billionaire under 30.
Yeah. Patience. Stephen Bartlett started in 2017 with a pod in a cupboard on his own. and he just recorded his thoughts. Today, I mean, he's going to be a billionaire. There's no doubt in my mind he'll be a billionaire from content. So it's just that long game, patience, consistency. And by the way, just to close, one last final thing. When you first start, when I was trying to develop the discipline of CapCut and everything for like 30 days, I said, I'm going to do one reel a day for 30 days. And it was going to be like what you did, Perry, a 90 second down the barrel or a 60 second down the barrel. It at first, I was like, oh my God, this is taking me an hour to an hour and a half a day to produce 90 seconds because I'd shoot it five times and then I was shit at editing. I was slow. I didn't know how to do it. By the end of 30 days, it took me 30 minutes or 20 minutes to do that reel to a high quality. I'd record it, I'd cut it, I'd pop in and out, I'd add the subtitles, and it was just like, you know, awesome. Sorry, I should have turned my notifications off. We're almost finished anyway. So you will get faster at it. It's going to be difficult and slow and laborious. But then, like my 8-second clips now, the first one, I was like, oh fuck, this is and now just easy. It takes you 20 minutes, write my caption, shoot my shit, and I'm done. And I'm getting 8,000 to 10,000 profile visits a month from that. That to me is the metric. It's not the views, it's the people who watch it and then go to my chat, my link and go, who is this guy? Stu, thank you for coming on, mate. Perry, thank you for coming. James, as always, thank you for being here from Burley Heads. I love how we're all rocking the unemployable hats. We will be selling these hats. Where are we selling them? Is there a link in the bio?
There's a link in the bio.
Link in the bio. Let's go grab an unemployable hat. Show your love for the content. If you like this content, guys, please like, subscribe, share. But the subscribe one's a big one because it helps us get more high-quality guests agreeing to come on the show. It's how many subs we have, so that helps. With that said, guys, thank you for watching. Thank you for being here, gentlemen, and we'll see you all in the next episode of Unemployable. Hey there, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.